KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon. Thanks for listening.
Truth is, I thought it mattered. I thought that music mattered. But does it bother us?
The listening public. No, compared. The other point of view.
There was a strong sense that this was the beginning of something that would spread across the country.
On Sunday, November 3rd, at the historic Hollywood Theater, KBOO presents an exclusive benefit screening of the film KPFA On the Air.
This documentary tells the powerful story of the beginnings of listener-sponsored radio in the United States with the birth of Pacifica in Berkeley in 1949.
KPFA On the Air chronicles the origins of the free speech movement, the first stirrings of the student movements at Berkeley, and opposition to the Vietnam War in the early 1960s.
Eventually spawning a network of free-form, independent radio stations across the country, including KBOO, which came on the air in 1968. So come join us at the Hollywood Theater, Northeast 41st and Sandy Boulevard, Sunday, November 3rd, at 7 in the evening.
Help keep community radio strong and thriving into the future.
Muertos Northwest invites you to the 5th annual Dia de los Muertos celebration, Saturday, November 2nd, at the Audio Cinema, 226 Southeast Madison Street, Portland, under the Hawthorne Bridge. Celebration of life and death. Come help the spirits of your loved ones return with their favorite food, drinks, and plenty of dancing. Bring an item to add to the community altar. Muertos face painting for the young and old, sugar skull decorating, hot chocolate and pan dulce will be served. Come check out Mariachi Portland, Conjunto Alegre, and Rafa and the Deadliest Catch Band. Come for the Muertos, stay for the food. Food, drinks, and dancing. Sponsored in part by KBOO, Tequila Cuervo, and Cover Oregon. Visit Facebook Muertos Northwest.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is approximately 9:02 a.m. Coming up is APA Compass, followed at 10 by Air Cascadia, at 10:15 with Flashpoints, a report on NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden, and 11 on It Takes a Village, Shahid Hamid hosts part 2 of Confessions of a Reformed Gangbanger, The Turnaround. At 11:30, the workers who put food on our restaurant tables are struggling to feed themselves and their families, and we'll hear from Sarujaya Rahman, co-director of the Restaurant Opportunity Centers United and author of Behind the Kitchen Door. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support in our recent membership drive. We came very close to our goal. We need about $9,237 to go over the top. You can go to kboo.fm right now and make your contribution. Stay tuned for APA Compass.
Good morning. You're listening to APA Compass, the Pacific Northwest's only Asian Pacific American public affairs radio program. On today's Heart to Heart, Ka shares a special holiday message with her listeners, which is followed by her interview with Ping Ka Sutherland, who is president of the APA Chamber of Commerce and a local artist. Also, musician Dal Strom plays from her latest creation, We Were Meant to Be a Gentle People, a hybrid music CD and chapbook, which draws upon her Vietnamese family's experiences. But first, historian Joe Ogden describes the Punjabi community, which thrived in Astoria, Oregon, around 1900, and the leading role they played among the Punjabi diaspora.
Well, good evening, everyone. I am Willis Van Dusen, the mayor of Astoria. Yay! And this is a wonderful celebration. It is such an honor to represent the community for this event. And I'd like to welcome you all home. This is the home. 100 years ago, a very historic event happened in Astoria, and we're going to celebrate that this weekend.
Thanks for tuning in to APA Compass. I'm Sari Gametha. You just heard remarks from the opening reception of the Guther Party Centennial Celebration last month in Astoria, Oregon. Until quite recently, most Oregonians were unaware that there was a community of Punjabi laborers living and thriving in the early 1900s. Additionally, this community included the Indian Nationalist Guther Party, the initial seeds to the Indian independence movement. So how did all of this come to light? Jo Ogden, local historian, unearthed this history in her publication, Gather Historical Silences and Notions of Belonging, Early 1900s Punjabis of the Columbia River. She then made sure the City Council of Astoria was aware that this was the 100-year anniversary of the Gather Party's formation in their city. Her work also awarded her the 2013 Joel Palmer Award, granted by the Oregon Historical Society. Jo Ogden always had an interest in community histories, but most of the motivation behind her work stems from belonging and citizenship. Specifically, the events surrounding September 11th inspired much of her research and led her to the Gather Party. She joined me at KBOO to chat about this journey and this little-known history that led to the centennial celebration in Astoria last month.
But this one was really motivated by 9/11, and it was in the sense that when I certainly wasn't alone in this, but when I saw those towers get hit, you knew no good was going to come out of it in terms of the response of this country to it, both internationally and domestically. And, you know, my mother grew up in L.A., and she grew up in a largely Japanese community, and she went from going to school with people to suddenly those same people were considered enemies. And that's the question I wanted to think about. How does that happen? And I was looking for a story to find a way to talk about those issues, how you go from being a part of, how the other gets delineated, basically, how it gets defined.
And how did this lead specifically to the area of early Punjabi immigration?
Stumbles is really kind of the word I use. When I started looking for a way to talk about post 9/11 issues, just to make a long story short, ended up meeting Cambiz Ganay Basiri, who's a professor at Reed College. And he did a small collection of Arab American interviews in this state. And he was nice enough to let me go ramble to him one afternoon about my concerns and what kind of things I was looking to do. And he was very quiet through most of that hour and said to me, well, if I were you, I would look at Punjabi migrants to the area and the Gather Party. And that sort of is what got me on the trail. You know, I found some photos here in the state of men working on the railroad in southern Oregon with turbans on, and that about knocked me out of my chair. And then one thing led to another, and I ended up in Astoria and spent quite a long time over various months going through newspapers and started finding this history of, I didn't understand altogether what I was seeing in the beginning, and then found some secondary sources by Dr. Puri in India that in a couple of pages written in early 1970s sort of put the light bulb on as far as what I was seeing. So it's like all history, it's a collective project, you know, it's nobody does it alone.
Before we go further, I think we should probably explain the Gather Party and why this is an important subject so that we have some context.
Okay. So my research is about early, and by early I mean 1905 to about 1915. It's pretty specific. Punjabi and largely Sikh community that lived here in Oregon, predominantly from the Dalles to Astoria, the largest community of them. Roughly about 100, mainly men, one family lived in Astoria. Again, largely Sikh, but also included Muslims and Hindus. And in about 1913, they, as a part of the Punjabi community that existed from British Columbia to the Mexican-California border, in response to both the sort of restrictions that were on them for migration, jobs, racial violence, all of those things, they became a fairly politically restive community. And sort of radicalism developed around that, largely the center of that in British Columbia. But eventually it coalesced into a political party, and that party's name is the Gather Party. And it's considered sort of the beginning of what is now known as the Indian independence movement. So it was a radical nationalist party. Again, sort of my the heart of my research, I guess you'd say, is that that party has long been thought to have begun in California, which is where its headquarters ended up in San Francisco and had lots of support amongst the Punjabi and Sikh settlement in the Central Valley there. But I'm arguing that it actually crystallized in Astoria in 1913 and held its meeting in the Finnish Socialist Hall there, and went on to be a global movement with a newspaper and included people in the Philippines, all over the world. And basically their political strategy was, A, of all, it was religiously inclusive. So it was Sikh, Hindu, Muslim. Their attitude was it was a secular group, so check your religion at the door, but what our religion is to overthrow the British colonialists, and they used World War I as their opening to do that.
And you touched upon this, that the headquarters were in San Francisco.
Correct.
Is that the reason that history was erased in Oregon? Is it because of the headquarters, or why was this the case?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a really complicated question and a really good question. I think it's several things. And so I think the headquarters and the fact that the newspaper that they produced was there in San Francisco, that became its sort of notorious center. And a lot of the propagandists that were associated, the writers for the paper, the organizers, lived, congregated, worked there, certainly. I think it also has to do with there's been a continuous community of Punjabis and Sikhs throughout California, largely through the Central Valley. So there's a solid tie to that history here. And so I think the fact that this story disappeared, and we can talk about some of the reasons for that in Oregon,
beyond the party, the entire community's presence, which was living and thriving here in Oregon, Washington, Vancouver, that you had said that there were newspaper accounts of news bulletins of events. So obviously there was a documented presence, and
right.
Yet...
Yeah, and that's actually the piece in some ways that's the most interesting to me is, and I think it should be puzzling to other people and should give us pause for today, too. And I should say, and I'm going to circle back, but I should say that what interests me here is that I think how we tell the stories of our past really shape how we think and act in our present. So that's my interest here. This is a fascinating story, but I think if your story is just that Oregon's all shaped by the Oregon, you know, Lewis and Clark, the Oregon Trail, that really affects how you see today about who you think belongs, who forms your community. And part of what this story does, besides just being, again, people doing amazing things and it complicating our history, is it really complicates, it should, who we think about and who's here and who's a part of making us today.
It complicates our presence. So what are the implications of an entire community's presence being essentially erased from history?
Yeah, and again, I think that's, for me, that's one of the most interesting pieces of this puzzle, and there have been a lot of interesting pieces. First, I should say, when I started discovering this story, and then I realized that none of us presently knew anything about it, what I assumed was going to fill that gap would be racial violence, would be mobs, riots, people driven out, which if you consider the Chinese presence, you know, that's a lot of what happened all over the West Coast. If you consider the Punjabi and Sikh presence, that's what happened, for example, in Washington and Bellingham, terrible riots and people...
1907.
Yeah,
right.
In 1907, exactly. And I think, and those riots, 1907 in Bellingham and a few, and on Labor Day of all things, and a few days later in British Columbia, similar riot. And it was actually in response to those riots that I think people started coming to Oregon. But I found that it wasn't racial violence, but it's a very complicated racial policy that exists in this state. And I think it comes down to this. It comes down to early founders of the state and early you know, the editor of the Oregonian, one of the mayors, one of the governors, they took the stand of like, look, they looked up and down the West Coast, they saw the Chinese getting driven out, and then you can go down the litany of other people after the Chinese that mm-hmm. had similar violence perpetrated against them. And they said, these people are getting driven out. We need laborers. This is like perfect for us. So they took a stand against that kind of overt racial violence. It wasn't because they were inclusive in their vision. I think the policy was, we're not going to allow racial violence because then people will come here, will be able to use their labor. We won't allow them to be citizens. We won't allow them to vote. We won't allow them to own property, but we'll get all the benefits. So on one side, they were saying, yeah, come on. And on the other side, they were telling the sort of solid population of Oregon that they considered to be the solid piece, they're not going to stay. It's okay. They're just coming to work and then they'll go away, right? But I do think that this racial policy of Oregon had everything to do with the social assumptions behind it and how it sort of floats into everybody's head and seeps into the pores. That's ultimately why this story got erased. Because you know, part of what I talk about in that article is that, you know, I looked through all sorts of records and you'd see things where, like in police records of jailings, they would contrast American with Negro or Jew. So they would say they had arrested Americans and then they'd had arrested a Negro and a Jew. And as far as I last checked, those people were considered part of this country. But that's the social erasure that goes on. And I think when people talked about who were the pioneers and founders in a town, anybody with the last name Singh was not included. You know, so that's ultimately how this story got erased, was just through social assumption.